This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It is Sabres Live. It's one of those you can't make this up Wednesdays.
Really?
It is. And I don't know why this seems to happen a lot.
Okay.
Rocket Richard winner this year to be. Maybe MVP to be.
Mm-hmm.
Leon Draisaitl had the longest point streak in the NHL this year, an 18-gamer, and yet somehow it came to an end in a 7-1 rout over Utah.
Yeah, that is incredible to think. And look, the Oilers, McDavid at 3 points, Hyman 3 points, RNH 3 points, Matthias Ekholm comes back after missing six. He has 3 points. It's like everybody, but Colson was on there. Draisaitl got dinged up a little bit in the game and then kind of took it easy, I think. But he had a few great opportunities.
Yes,
but even in a 7-1 game. Oh, yeah. In a 7-1 game, to not have touched a puck before a goal, like that was pretty. But I will tell you this, Draisaitl's probably saying, fine, I don't care about the point. They got a big win against a team, Utah, that had been charging. And now, listen, I know the Sabres are in Utah tomorrow night, and maybe, they all watched it on TV last night and was like, okay, we got to do exactly what the Oilers did. But, there's not a lot of Sabres news going on right now. They had the day off yesterday. They're not practicing until this afternoon. We'll have news tomorrow for you on the Sabres, but around the National Hockey League last night, wow, was it exciting. And those playoff races eating up was spectacular.
Well, Utah laid a mammoth egg last night. So
that is an undercover, sneaky, good reference there, Duffer. Because the Utah Hockey Club has now continued their trademark like filing. And it looks like the Mammoth will be their team name next year. That is the rumor mill right now. So when you say they laid a mammoth egg, that is a sneaky good reference. I don't know that anybody but me kind of caught that.
Producer Jeff did for sure. And it's 2 minutes into the show.
And Insider George definitely did also.
It's 2 minutes into the show and I have peaked. So you're on your own for the final 52. It was, it's relevant, last night's Oilers win, for the Draisaitl note, for where Edmonton is in the standings, what they're trying to accomplish, can still win the division because Vegas has stubbed their toe. But more importantly, from a Sabres standpoint, Utah is coming off a humiliating loss, and they lost ground. Vancouver won. St. Louis won. Calgary won. It could not have been a worse night for the new Utah franchise.
Yeah, and it couldn't have been a worse night for anybody that's wanting to be smart and kind of cheeky on social media, because Calgary win, right? So you're like, oh, the Calgary Flames have won. They're in a wild card spot. And then St. Louis wins. Oh, the St. Louis Blues have won, and they're in a wild card spot. And now Calgary and Vancouver are out. And people are saying, oh, look at this. Two Canadian teams are out of the playoffs out west. And sure enough, Vancouver pulls a, which was an unexpected win against the Winnipeg Jets, but let's just, you know, kind of like the Flames too. But, you know, now Vancouver slides back in. So I'm like, if you were too quick and too finger happy on social media, you probably went and deleted some tweets or some posts, because it changed multiple times in the Western Conference last night.
So Vancouver has won 3 of 4. Are you going to change your tune?
No, I still think St. Louis is the team that gets in. I really, Duffer, you probably were the one that the Binnington build me up a little bit. Like, you're like, I think the guy's a gamer, and winning the Four Nations face-off and getting that, hey, I can do it, right? I can silence all the naysayer. Mm-hmm. I can silence Marty Biron in Buffalo that think that I suck. And then he took that and took it a step further with his team. I think this is great. Now, I mean, I think it was Joel Ofer last night, so it wasn't Binnington, but still, Binnington's a big part of it.
In the history of NHL commentary, no one has silenced Martin Biron. There, many things can be true, but in this case, that is the truism. My goodness. Anyway, they've won 3 out of 4.
Well, the Montreal Canadiens are silencing me right now.
Hang on. Let's stay in the West since we started there. So Vancouver's won 3 out of 4.
Yep.
Calgary held or didn't. The New York Rangers may have held themselves to 13 shots on goal, channeling their inner Boston Bruin on home ice. What a dismal display until the final 2 minutes, when they looked like they might actually tie it up.
I am going to read you a tweet from Rob, not a tweet, a text from Rob yesterday. So, you know, this is somebody that works at TSN that I text with once in a while, and he goes, where did he text me? He goes, not for the broadcast or anything. It's not that this is really a topic, but are the Rangers just that bad? I've watched the last 2 games closely, and I've been extremely underwhelmed. And they had 13 shots yesterday. And look, they were right there, and Shesterkin kept them in, and a great response from the Calgary Flames. But the Rangers scored early in the game. They get Panarin to go on a partial breakaway 2-on-1. He gets in. But Calgary just stormed back. Mackenzie Weegar had a great game. And then they didn't even sit back. Like, Calgary wasn't even, oh, we don't want to make a mistake. We're up 2-1. We're going to sit back. They kept pushing, and Shesterkin had to be good. If not, that would have been a 5-1 game.
So Calgary back in the win column on the heels of a lopsided loss. And St. Louis just continues to roll. Now, granted, it was a meager opponent in the Nashville Predators, who seemingly are focused only on whatever lies ahead for concerts in Nashville. I should be more.
That's what I was going to say. What bar on Broadway are we going to tonight? Basically.
And that's too over the top. But they just don't look well right now. And they're obviously third worst in the NHL. And it's been a miserable existence and an unprecedented, you know, top five worst season in franchise history. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, though, is 10-2-2. And every little thing about them just seems impressive at this point in time. So, I don't know. You're big on them. I'm kind of worried Vancouver's going to maybe pull this rabbit out of the hat. But do you trust,
Brock Besser had a great game with Vancouver yesterday. Elias Pettersson looked better. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like I can trust those two to be at the next level that needs to be happening every game. Quinn Hughes is fantastic. Oh, Quinn Hughes.
Did you see that side by side graphic of like with Quinn and without last night? I think I was watching the Jets broadcast, which made it even more impressive, like how much they wanted to emphasize Quinn Hughes' impact on the Vancouver game. Oh, my God.
I watched the Vancouver broadcast, which they were doing a telethon during the broadcast. So it was
Canucks for kids.
Yeah. And it was incredible. So I stayed with that broadcast because I wanted to listen to the stories.
They do a wonderful job.
It's a great organization. Anyway, so it was fantastic. So I didn't see the graphic you're talking about, but I know that this Vancouver Canucks team looks completely different. But if I'm going to compare Vancouver and the St. Louis Blues, I'm looking at the St. Louis Blues and their addition. Dylan Holloway is at a really good year. Jordan Kyrou is near closing in on 30 goals. There is, you know, that I'm talking to Thomas and those guys, like they have a solid group right now playing really well.
They do. And they're, again, still on the outside. And then there's, you know, the more inside divisional play. And Dallas gets another enormous win. Ducks were full credit for finally having a what I thought was a really strong game start to finish. Mikael Granlund had 2 goals. It's concerning still, no matter how good Dallas is playing, that Heiskanen may not make it back until like maybe round two. You know, and that is devastating. He's a one on most teams in the NHL and by a million miles, a number one on the Dallas Stars. So it's, I don't know how they're going to overcome it. They have elite forward depth for sure. Mm-hmm. But boy, oh boy. And
the problem is they won't finish first in their division. So you're
they've separated a little bit from Colorado with still a game in hand. And that's what's really interesting here. So,
but if you were Dallas and you say, okay, we'll finish first in the division and maybe we get St. Louis or maybe we get, Vancouver, Minnesota in the first round, you're thinking, okay, that will buy you some time. You win the first round, Heiskanen comes back. But it is going to be Colorado, Dallas in the first round. And if you don't have Miro Heiskanen, you're playing one of the probably top four favorites to win the cup this year in Colorado. You're going to get them in the first round because of the
And the Norris winner in Cale Makar this year.
Cale Makar, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, all due respect to Werenski, who I've been propping up all year, but the reality is what Makar has done of late and consistently, and because of Quinn Hughes' injury, he's not likely to repeat as Norris winner, even though his numbers would tell you it's fair game to give him a chance to be a repeat winner, but I don't think they're going to deny Makar that honor.
Again, if Columbus were to make the playoffs of the leadership and the play of Zach Werenski, it'd be a different story. But Columbus is dropping off a little bit. Zach Werenski's dropping off a little bit. And Makar and the Avalanche keep soaring right through everything. So it's like, okay, that makes sense. I would even argue right now that if Vancouver makes the playoff, Quinn Hughes and his play probably would slide in ahead of Zach Werenski just because of what you talk about, the win-loss record. Mm-hmm. Some would say that's more of an MVP vote when your impact to your team is that incredible. But the best defenseman right now, Makar, Hughes, are kind of in their own little bubble.
So the West has action tonight with Colorado at Toronto and Seattle at Minnesota as the only two games in the NHL this evening. But Toronto's presence, as we discussed yesterday in large detail within the Atlantic, could mess with the standings very quickly here, given that Tampa, Florida, and Toronto are all separated by 2 points. When we look at the East, though, Marty, and we have a lot to get into, and obviously Buffalo is at Utah tomorrow to continue the four-game trip, I want to start at the top because number one in the NHL is, again, the Washington Capitals.
Yes.
I broke their season down because we've talked about them in so many ways, but I certainly haven't looked at them this way. Incredibly, they lost their first game of the year, but they finished their first 10-game segment 8-2.
Yeah.
In the following 10-game segments, they have gone 5-4-1, 8-1-1, 5-3-2, 8-1-1, 4-3-3, and now 7-1. So they are likely to have four segments of 8 wins or more.
Yeah.
Do you know how hard it is for anybody to get 40 wins in a season? Like, it's just, it's, they're number one in goals for, they're number two in goals against. I'm curious whether you see something glaring here that doesn't allow you or others to believe in this team.
The glaring part for me, and if you want to start there, they've had great goaltending all year, but they keep doing a rotation. And I don't know that you can keep doing that for 82 games and have somebody ready for the playoffs. So unless the Washington Capitals kind of show me, okay, we have a number one guy, we're going to play that guy more, and we're going to get ramped up for the playoffs, I still am going to put a question mark. Like, think of Swayman, Allmark in Boston. They kept going back and forth. Like, oh, this is nice. Like, if Swayman has a bad game, it's okay. Allmark's going to play the next one, and then I'll play in 2 games, and I'll be fine. That's what is going on in Washington and has worked well. But when it comes to playoffs, that doesn't translate in the same way. And Boston has obviously seen that the last couple of years and how they've not been able to continue on the same rhythm that they had in the regular season. So that's why I'm worried about the Washington Capitals. But if there is a team out there that I look at their depth, and I don't think that people give Tom Wilson enough credit, Connor McMichael enough credit, Lars Eller coming back, I don't think people give him enough credit. Like, it's not just Pierre-Luc Dubois, Ovechkin, Alexei Protas, it's everybody else, and they all play the same. When Brandon Duhaime steps on the ice as a fourth liner, they still are fast, they still forecheck, they still all play the same. That's the thing. That's Spencer Carberry and the Washington Capitals in a nutshell right there.
Tom Wilson has largely cut the crap out of his game. He is a 30-goal scorer for the first time. They may end up with 4 30-goal scorers. Protas is 1 away. McMichael is 6 away. Yep. Obviously, Ovechkin is the other. They may end up with 6 players with 60 or more points. They are second only to Colorado in points by defensemen. And if you've been following the Avalanche story, they have led or almost led this category for so long. And what have we thought about the Avalanche? Really good team. And I just, this is right now trending to be the 3rd best season in franchise history for Washington. Now, that hasn't translated into success. They weren't anywhere close to that the year they finally won the cup in 2019, but they were good. And you mentioned the goaltending, and you laid it out about as clear in recent history as possible, because last night, Logan Thompson won for the 30th time. He is 30 wins, 4 losses, and 5 regulation losses. He has tied for the fewest regulation losses when hitting the 30-win milestone.
Yeah.
Tiny Thompson in 1930.
My boy, Tiny.
Bill Dernan in 1944, and Linus Allmark just a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
that's it.
And Allmark had a Vezina Trophy winning season.
Right.
Logan Thompson, unfortunately, is not going to win the Vezina this year. It will be Connor Hellebuck. Look, unless Hellebuck has a terrible end to the season, and then you have to rethink it, but it's going to be Connor Hellebuck. Winnipeg wasn't great last night. Hellebuck was just average. But I think Winnipeg has to do the opposite of what Washington and Toronto has to do now. Washington and Toronto have to pick a starter and up their workload a little bit. Winnipeg has to say, Connor Hellebuck, we're going to give you more of a break. I thought Hellebuck could get to 49 wins this year, could get to maybe 50. You know, 48 is the record in a season. Braden Holby and Marty Brodeur, I think it is. Anyway, Bernie Parent in a different era where you did not get overtime and shootout wins at 47, which was incredible. That may be the best stat, right, in goaltending, like wins in a season. I thought Hellebuck was going to get to 48, 49, maybe 50. It's not going to happen. You move on. Now you give Comrie a few more starts in Winnipeg, and you rest your starter because he needs a big playoffs this year.
So now that I've given you all the Capitals numbers, except for the other area that they lead the league, which I thought you might use as a negative against them. They lead the NHL in all situations, shooting percentage, and five-on-five shooting percentage. So the only question that often comes from that is it sustainable? But I think you offset it by talking about their depth, right?
Yeah, and look, this team has scored empty net goals, which helps a lot when you're winning because that helps your shooting percentage. You know, the empty net goals, it's one shot and one goal. It's great. Well, yeah, because you cannot miss an empty net goal and be credited a shot on goal. If you miss the net, it's not a shot. So that those empty net goals help. But yeah, the depth is going to help. Now, here's a little this or that for you, Duffer. Because as it stands right now, if playoffs were to start tomorrow, the Washington Capitals would play the Montreal Canadiens in the first round because the Montreal Canadiens are now in the second wild card spot with Ottawa being in the first wild card and only 4 points separating those two teams. It could have been eight, but it was four. Montreal comes back in the third period yesterday. Who wins that first round matchup? Washington or Montreal? Because it's not as easy as saying first place team should win and the eighth place team won't. It's a pretty tight, it would be a tight matchup, I think, Montreal and Washington.
I agree. And I'm scarred by, I think it was 2009-10 when Halak shut down Ovi, much to my chagrin. I certainly wouldn't be a person that throws all my chips in against the hottest team in the final 2 months of the regular season. And Montreal, by winning again, remains the hottest team post Four Nations. Do you know, can you name, because there's only one.
Yeah.
Can you name the one player in the NHL that has more points than Nick Suzuki post Four Nations?
Post Four Nations, man, it's not McDavid.
He's in the West. We've talked about his team McKinnon? Already. Nope.
We talked about his team already.
They won last night.
So we talked about St. Louis. We talked about the Stars. I am going to go with the Stars. Who on the Stars would be that guy? Wyatt Johnson?
Roope Hintz.
Roope Hintz, okay.
Isn't that amazing?
That's pretty crazy. Roope Hintz and Nick Suzuki since the Four Nations.
19 points for Hintz, 18 for Suzuki, Draisaitl, and, as you suspected, Connor McDavid.
Yeah, McDavid's heating up a little bit, which is good. And last night he scored, which he had only gotten three goals in his previous 17. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had no goals in 10, right? So that was big. But Montreal, okay, so we've talked about the Suzuki line. Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský have been great in the second half of the season. Suzuki, I would think, may get some votes, maybe a fifth-place vote for MVP. That's how good he's been with the Montreal Canadiens if they make the playoffs. But their depth, Christian Dvorak scores a goal early in the game. Anderson has a big game. Gallagher digs the puck out from under Linus Solmark. Suzuki scores. But one thing that happened in that game yesterday, Duffer, that was like it really could have been a scary moment is Josh Anderson took a skate to the back of the ankle and the skate blade actually went right between the skate and the sock, right? Like the game sock and it looked like he was gonna have a full Achilles tendon cut, and even his reaction was he felt the steel on his leg, and he went to the back to the bench. And he's like, "No, I'm good. Everything's fine." And he had a fantastic game. So I couldn't believe it. I'm like, either it was Pinto with Ottawa has the dullest blades ever, like it's a butter knife that you know, or either Josh Anderson's wearing cut resistant socks. And so just like that, I reached out to my old buddy Jim Ramsey, who is my trainer and my medical guy in the Rangers. He's now in Montreal. He said, "Yeah, let me check with Josh if he's okay to talk about it." And he responded back, "Incredible that this was the first time in his career that Josh Anderson wore cut-resistant socks. He had never worn cut-resistant socks in his career. And somehow, they've been educating the players to wear that. You got Tom Fitzgerald, the GM of the New Jersey Devils, pleading for the league to mandate cut resistance, neck protection, wrist protection, and socks because Casey Fitzgerald, former Sabres, got a cut to the neck this year playing in the AHL. So as a father and as a GM, he says, this is what we need to do. So all of these put together, Josh Anderson says, you know what? I'm going to try these socks the last few days. He decides to wear them, and it saved this season. Maybe saved his career. Right? Because who knows if you come back from an Achilles cut like this and what it's going to be like. Incredible story out of Montreal last night.
Well, kudos to you for reaching out.
I was reaching out on a request from Darren Dreger, by the way.
Yeah. Well, so you're the insider to the insider? How does that
work? I'm the assistant to the insider, not the assistant insider. Very different.
Should we work on a new intro when Dreger joins later in the week?
You know what? Let's let Dreger enjoy it, you know? Because I think it was discussed last night and this morning at the GM's meeting about this incident with Josh Anderson and the fact that Tom Fitzgerald had just spoke to the media about it, emotionally spoke to the media about it. Because he's like, my wife and I were scared to death when Casey took that skate to the neck in December this year. And now, you know, he's like, so here's the thing. He wants the league to grandfather it in. New players coming in, just like visors and helmets were once grandfathered. Neck protection, wrist protection, socks, right? That should be mandatory. It's hard to mandate the wrist and the socks because you probably can't see it, but you can see the players wearing the neck or not wearing the neck guard. So that's probably, but Tom Fitzgerald also said that he would, if he doesn't get any pushback from the NHLPA, mandate it in New Jersey, even if there's no league rule towards it. Kind of like Lou Lamoriello doesn't want anybody to have the beard and, you know, the Yankee style. Well, Tom Fitzgerald wants to mandate it in New Jersey that everybody that plays for his team has the neck protection.
So I stopped by to see my youngest at work yesterday. And I asked her about school, and what do you think she told me about based on what you just said?
Somebody had an accident at school, like a
She's in an EMT class.
Oh.
And the teacher talked about the Clint Malarchuk incident.
No way.
I'm not kidding. This is crazy how some days it just becomes a dominant theme for,
Richard Zednik with the Florida Panthers.
And that's what I was telling her was we had another horrifying incident involving Richard Zednik. Yeah.
And look, cuts happen all the time. I remember Donald Odette, I believe, ended up having a cut on his hand from a skate that fell into the locker room and he cut some tendons in his
Dan
wrist.
Dan Boyle had the same thing.
Had the same thing, like in the locker room. It's simple. And I remember Kalo Koliakovo years ago when there was an OHL goalie at Niagara, I believe, who got a cut in the back of his leg and almost died.
Yes.
Horrifying. And Carlo partnered up with a cut-resistant like company that does like kind of like the Under Armour stuff you put underneath your gear. And I remember getting something sent for my son Jacob to wear because I'm like, he's playing youth hockey. There's no EMT and no trainers that would save his life if something like that happened. And I know we have tons of hockey players in this area. I just would ask parents to do their homework. Like, your kid is 12 years old. If he says, no, mom and dad, I don't want to wear cut-resistant things. It's uncomfortable. And you're 12 years old. You're not playing the NHL. You're not making $10 million. Like, an accident can happen. And you're going to get used to it. And in 2 weeks from now, you won't even say anything. Neck guard, cut protector, socks, because it's the leg, the Achilles, leg pants, they protect the back of the legs where you have that artery in the thigh by the femur, right? Like wear the protection. It doesn't cost more money. It doesn't cost less money. It's the same thing.
Did you not have mandated neckwear as a kid in Canada? We did.
We did, but tougher. I remember the guys used to tape, use like white or black tape, like stick tape, and they would roll it and tape it. So they would, it basically was wearing a bracelet.
Right.
And I wore a turtleneck. And so I felt like this was going to give me a little protection, but I didn't like wearing the neck guard. And luckily enough, I never took a skate up there, but I did break my collarbone. And Jim Ramsey, the medical guy in Montreal now, when I broke my collarbone, he was with me in New York. And he goes, why are you not wearing a neck guard, like a neck protection? I'm like, I have the plastic dangler. He goes, that's not going to do anything if your head sideways. And he forced me to wear a neck guard underneath my stuff. And he had it reinforced on both collarbones. And I thought, come on. And like, it took me 2 weeks. I was used to it.
Did you have an MRI after that?
I had an X-ray. I can show you the X-ray.
No. I feel like you recently told us an MRI story. So that was
I was a kid when I had the MRI story.
Oh, were you? Oh, I thought okay.
I was getting headaches as a kid, migraine. They wanted to make sure everything was all right. So they put me in a MRI CAT scan type of machine. And unfortunately, I had a little Tracy Morgan incident in the MRI. So yeah.
Amazing.
It wasn't poisoning. It was from being in that claustrophobic situation. But yeah, I had a little Tracy Morgan incident.
It's amazing how you can always bring it full circle with current events. I'm so impressed. We have the Sabres tomorrow, of course, in Utah. Yes. And not too far down the road, later on this month, we have Sabres Pride Night, and we have a T-shirt and ticket package available now, and we hope to see you at KeyBank Center for this one. It's March 27th. Penguins are in town. This package starts at just $30. Visit sabres.com/pridepack to purchase yours today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.